50, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trance here. We are live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And this hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. You need forklifts that perform under pressure and pallet racking that maximizes your space. Visit them online at racksteel.com. Trance, what's going on, man?
Not much, buddy. Welcome everybody to Canucks Talk, with where we take care of all your Canucks Talk needs.
Sure.
And also, if you miss us for that, there's lots of other programming.
There is.
Sportsnet 650. Now, we talk Canucks all the time.
We are we're taking like a little mini hiatus here. It was our last show of the week, and then we go into the long weekend, so we're not back for another week. 1 week today on May 20th, which
is my birthday.
Oh, well, look at that.
Yeah.
Back. Are you back? No.
No, I'm back. I'm still in Jamaica.
So you get your birthday off. Anyways. Yeah,
I guess.
Bold of us to take the mini hiatus while the Canucks are in what appears to be an accelerating coaching search. So we'll see if we survive. We get through the week off without being called in for emergency podcast duties because the Canucks have hired a new head coach. And by the way, since it is our last show of the week, we're doing a Wednesday on a Tuesday here on Canucks Talk. So we've got the crossover coming up in a few minutes with Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. And then we'll chat with our pal Jason Bukala from Sportsnet at 1. So busy show today, but it does feel like, and I know you reported earlier today on Donnie and Dolly, so a double dose for you. Very exciting.
Love hanging out with those gentlemen.
You reported today that Adam Foote, very much a serious candidate. And then Patrick Johnston going a little farther even on Blue Sky, saying it's down to Foote and Malhotra, with Malhotra of a slight favorite. So we heard shortlist, you know, 2-3 names, 3-4 names, maybe Marco Sturm in the mix, and PJ saying kind of.
I haven't heard as much as PJ. Right. Okay. I also would say I can't confirm names of other candidates involved, including Marco Sturm, despite my best efforts working the phones before going away on vacation. I didn't want to get caught completely flat-footed. So I've worked the phones a bit this morning. What PJ is reporting, that's out ahead of my skis anyway.
Mm-hmm.
What I would say is, the Canucks aren't just at the point of having a shortlist, as Elliot Friedman alluded to, but the shortlist, right? The fact that it's only 3 or 4 names long is both accurate and telling. This is not an organization that wants to wait. This is not an organization that's going to be like the last of the 7 coaching vacancies to get filled. This is a team that wants to identify their guy and begin to move forward. I believe the organization feels that there's an edge in terms of doing so, not just in terms of making a decision on their own terms, but also in terms of filling out the staff,
right?
Which could be critical, especially in the event that, for example, the club ends up with like a relatively inexperienced head coaching candidate.
Well, let's say, now you can't confirm Marco Sturm, but let's say it is Adam Foote, Manny Malhotra, and Marco Sturm. Between those three, they have, I think, 5 years of head coaching experience.
Right.
So it is inherently, if that's the list, it's going to be with 3 of those belonging to Marco Sturm. Inherently, that's going to be, it's going to be an inexperienced head coach. Now, maybe could Jay Woodcroft or something still be in the mix? Who knows? But the candidates we're hearing most about, inexperienced. And as you're saying, in that context, really important to put together the experienced staff. Okay. Lots of coaching search talk coming up here throughout the show.
And I guess the other thing that I'd say where Patrick Johnston's reporting goes beyond where I'd be comfortable going is the idea of Malhotra as the front runner ahead of Adam Foote. I don't know if that's necessarily true. And I'm not saying that it isn't. I'm just saying I don't know that. And the sense I get increasingly is that Foote is a guy we should be very much keeping front and center on our radars here.
All right, let's get into it next with our guests here for the crossover, Don Taylor and Rick Dhaliwal. You can watch them on Donnie and Dolly Monday to Friday, 10 to noon on Check TV.
It occurs to me that the crossover is like meant to refer to the fact that it's their show and our show coming together.
Yes.
But it also describes mine and Rick Dhaliwal's relationship, where we make one another cross, and then we forgive each other instantly, so it's over. So that's really what...
There you go.
It just occurred to me that a good summary for me and Dhaliwal.
Have you had time to get over it since your hit on their show earlier today?
Yeah, I mean, we had nothing to be upset about except for the fact that Rick doesn't like gin.
Yeah. So, Rick, you say you've never tried gin, never once ingested gin.
He sniffed it. I sniffed it. I took the.
But he didn't inhale.
He snorted it.
Stop it, Donnie. I took a sniff. I didn't like the taste, and I said that's not for me, and I backed off.
You've never had a Long Island iced tea?
No.
What?
Not that I can think of.
Gin and tonic.
I can picture you with a tall Long Island iced tea, Rick. I think you would love that. I think you should try that out.
Crown all the way. Nothing else.
I got to say that Long Island iced tea was big in the 80s.
Donnie.
I'm not sure it has gin.
In the 80s.
Does it have gin in it?
Yes.
I don't know if it's got gin. I'm not a gin guy. I took a sniff. I didn't like it. I backed off. I never tried it.
The thing with Long Island iced tea is it has everything in it. Vodka, tequila, rum, gin.
All right.
It does.
You can't go wrong.
Yeah. There was a sketchy establishment near my near where I lived in university. Cash only, like a clear front. You know, in one of those like dingy places. And back when I was a broke student, they offered a pitcher of Long Island iced tea, which had maybe six or seven shots in it for $8. $8. So on those nights when you were going out and you had like $15 total to spend, right? You start your night there. You have a pitcher of Long Island iced tea. You're already stumbling out. You need one more drink at the bar. You've had a great night. In fact, you've had too good a night.
Rick used to snort gin there.
I sniffed. You know how you smell. You smell.
Yeah, I know. I get it.
I smelled it. I took the. You know what I'm talking about.
You wafted it. You did the hand like you're sniffing a fine wine, right?
Yeah, that's it.
A snifter. Yeah, I can picture.
But thanks for that, Jamie. I'm just looking. It's vodka, tequila, rum, gin, triple sec.
Ooh.
And lemon juice.
Triple sec is the key, by the way.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys keep triple sec on hand, but add it to just about everything.
Sure.
Your morning coffee.
I was going to say your coffee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Scrambled eggs. Now I want a Long Island iced tea. All right, let's get into it here, because as we were just saying before you guys got on the air, it seems like there's a lot happening with the Canucks and their head coaching vacancy. I know you guys talked about Adam Foote as a serious candidate with Drantz on your show earlier. Is this basically, like, do we know the whole list of candidates here, basically? Malhotra, Foote, and possibly Marco Sturm as well. Is there anyone else that you guys are, and Rick especially, that you're hearing or keeping an eye on in the course of this process?
No, Jamie, they don't. Obviously the Canucks don't release anything. You got to go out and you got to talk to people. But I'm definitely hearing what Thomas is hearing. Last night I was told to keep an eye on Adam Foote. And I think I was told that I specifically asked, is Adam Foote still in the mix to be the head coach of the Canucks? And I was told, yes, he is. Absolutely he is. There's a ton of respect in the organization. You know, the defensemen love him because he's a teacher. He's a teacher, right? Go look at Tyler Myers when asked about Adam Foote. He just loves him. And I was just told last night to keep an eye on Adam Foote. He's not out of it. So I specifically asked, is Adam Foote still in? And I was told he was. My only problem with Adam Foote is, if he's the new head coach of the Canucks, is don't do it just to keep Quinn Hughes here. You know, don't do it just because if you hire Adam Foote to keep Quinn Hughes here and he still walks in two years, you're going to look dumb. You're going to look dumb because all these guys, whoever, I believe the next head coach of the Canucks will get a 3-year deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
So guess what? Quinn Hughes could walk in two. That leaves you, you know, with 1 year left without Quinn Hughes if he walks. But I just, the biggest thing I was told last night is that do not discount Adam Foote.
Well, that's interesting because Adam Foote, wonderful career as a player, and I have all the respect for what Manny Malhotra went through as a player as well. But as inexperienced as Manny Malhotra is at the pro level as a coach, I think Adam Foote's less experienced.
Yeah.
As a head coach, what, one
no
unsuccessful
question.
And this is nothing against Adam, it's just facts.
Facts.
It one fairly unsuccessful season with the Kelowna Rockets.
Yeah.
At the junior level, at the pro level, nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, absolutely. Adam Foote was there with the Canucks, Vancouver Canucks, this past season, but Manny's been a head coach at the pro level, even if it's for 1 year. Adam Foote hasn't.
Yep.
So it's inexperience with either of them, Thomas.
Now, one thing that we have an advantage of doing in this market with a hockey operations group in Vancouver that's overseen by Jim Rutherford, who has a lengthy tenure as an NHL executive, is that there's all sorts of scenarios that we can bring up and say, hey, look, past behavior, that's a real tell that indicates future behavior. Now, Jim Rutherford left Carolina in the summer of 2014, right? And shortly thereafter, the Carolina Hurricanes, having replaced him, fired Kirk Muller and hired Bill Peters. And it took a while before they promoted an assistant coach who was, you know, 2 or 3 years into his assistant coaching career when Rutherford first hired him in 2011. And that was a gentleman named Rod Brind'Amour. And as much as I've been talking about the template of, you know, you look around the NHL and whether it's Cooper or Sullivan or Bednar or Carberry in Washington, who doubles as the president of the Don Taylor fan club. You know, we have a long history of sort of elite American League coaches becoming the next wave of great NHL head coaches. And what we don't necessarily have is a ton of like up jumped assistant coaches who've come in and crushed it. But we do have one key example, and it's an assistant coach in Rod Brind'Amour, a guy who Rutherford knew when he was a player, and Rutherford was the general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, a guy who Rutherford brought in as an assistant coach on Mueller's staff originally after firing Paul Maurice back for the second time in 2011, and a guy who, you know, as I understand it anyway, probably wouldn't have had to wait another 4 years until the Bill Peters era ended in Carolina to get his shot behind the bench as the head guy had Rutherford not left for Pittsburgh in the summer of 2014. I'm not saying necessarily that Adam Foote is the next Rod Brind'Amour, but you wonder, in terms of how sort of Rutherford evaluates these things and thinks about these things, you know, the certainly the presence that Foote brings, the leadership know-how that he brought as a player and that Rutherford's observed, and I'd add this, gentleman, the deep understanding that Foote would bring to the dynamics, understanding the dynamics of what's gone wrong for this group internally, you know, would obviously be leagues ahead of any other external candidate, probably including Manny Malhotra, who wasn't around the team living it every day over the course of the past
year. So I get that about the familiarity, but couldn't you also make the argument that you want a fresh look at it, right? That you want potentially approach, someone coming in without the baggage, you could say, of having gone through it and having those relationships, and someone to come in and kind of survey and say, man, it went off the rails in a big way. Here's what we need to do differently.
Like, we need a totally new way. Yeah. I understand if that's one approach, but also you don't even know what you don't know coming into this from the outside, whereas certainly Adam Foote would have a deeper understanding of what this team needs to do to get back on track from a cultural internal perspective. So that's sort of where I land here. What are you laughing about?
No,
I know what he's laughing
about. Henderson's laughing at you because you just babbled for 40 minutes. I do want to say something. It was a good take. I want to back you up on you, Rutherford. Because I mentioned this on Bruff and Ruff last Friday. Rutherford played a big role when Brind'Amour stopped playing and getting him into coaching. Rutherford also cut Paul Maurice as a 20-year-old in the OHL and got him into coaching. If Jim Rutherford believes in you and he sees potential as a coach in you, if he believes in you, he will hire you. And people say to me all the time, well, and one thing I want to say about Malhotra, guys, his time in Toronto didn't end well.
Mm-hmm.
He was taken off the power play by Carberry and Dubas, and he was pushed up into the eye in the sky, and he didn't like it. It wasn't a good final year for him in Toronto, right? It just wasn't. But, and Donnie likes him a lot, but here's, where are we in the Canucks cycle right now? Are you guys okay for a rookie coach? Because it sure looks like we're getting one. Right? Are you ready for it? Does this cycle of players want a rookie coach?
Who do you want? You want Peter Laviolette?
I don't want Peter Laviolette. But has the search, which last week they interviewed a ton of guys, Don, and now we're hearing we're down to the short list? That happened pretty quick for me. And I don't know like how much longer Malhotra's got in the American Hockey League playoffs. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, Rick. But I should have interrupted Thomas. But he's not laughing.
I was laughing. I give you
here's
a polite chuckle.
Malhotra, thank you. A golf chuckle.
Yeah.
With Manny Malhotra is having success in terms of what his team is doing on the ice at the American Hockey League level.
Yeah.
that sells, okay? Mm-hmm. So there's that, inexperience or not. And I also think that he sells off the ice. I think he's good for business, and we're kidding ourselves if we don't think that's going to play into this. Can you sell Adam Foote? Can you sell Peter Laviolette? I don't think you can. Jay Woodcroft,
yeah.
Maybe. And again, it all comes down to wins and losses. I get that. But I think if you think the owner's not going to have something to say about this, you're dreaming.
Yeah.
Manny Malhotra sells on a lot of levels. You can sell that guy. And I know he hasn't got a lot of experience. But I think as a fan, if I'm a fan, I'm okay with them hiring Manny Malhotra. In fact, I'm pretty excited about it.
I take that point, Johnny, and I know you guys have been talking about that this week, and we talked about it yesterday on the show as well. Is it going to be hard to sell somebody other than Malhotra to the fan base? I think there's some truth to that. But I also think back to when Tocchet took over from Boudreaux. That was extremely unpopular, right? Like, people did not care for that at all, and part of that was the way it went down and everything. But yeah, as you said, he was booed when he was introduced. And yet when the team started playing better and winning, everyone forgot about that and they got on board with Tocchet, right? So I think ultimately, would it be difficult to sell somebody other than Malhotra?
Yeah.
At first, sure, but ultimately the fans are going to react to a winning team. And so you have to go, you can't worry too much about what the reaction in May and June this year is going to be. You got to hire the guy that you think gives you the best chance to win, because that's what the fans are going to buy into more than anything.
Yeah. Okay, but hold it. They're not selling the new coach to the fans or the media. They don't care. It's about, can you sell it to the dressing room?
Mm-hmm.
Can you sell it to the dressing room? Like, you don't think Quinn Hughes is going to be kept abreast of the coaching search? Like, do you honestly think they're just going to pick the coach and say, hey, Quinn, we got him? Yeah, of course he is.
But you can't let him pick the coach either, Rick. You can't let Quinn Hughes pick the coach.
I've already said that.
Yeah. He might be gone in a year or two.
Yeah. And if you go with Manny, here's another one for you guys. You better hire some experienced coaches, because guess who's gone? Gonchar's gone. Foote's gone, because he'll go join Tocchet. Yogi Sefcovski, I don't know what's going on with him, if he's going to be back or not. You could have a brand new entire coaching staff in Vancouver next year. You want some...
Like, you set the world on fire, though.
No, I know, Donnie, but you do want some sort of somebody back from last year's staff.
Well, the don't ignore either that the Canucks, as they look to make a decision, you know, I don't want to say like an accelerated timeline. I don't want to put a timeline on it specifically, because as we know, things can change. But I do know that one thing that looms large in organizational thinking here is, if we pick our guy, if we find the right person and pick our guy, you know, on a relatively expedited timeline ahead of when some other teams do, we'll have something of an edge in terms of filling out the rest of the staff. And given that, you know, a lot of the candidates that we're hearing will potentially be first-time NHL head coaches, you know, adding some experienced voices on that staff wouldn't surprise me at all. So I do think that that's part of how the organization is looking at this, and partly why, you know, perhaps faster than we expected, it seems that this process has, you know, gotten mature or even advanced relatively quickly.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
And you know, guys, what we haven't brought up is that, although Rick sort of tossed it aside for a second there moments ago, but the possibility of Foote and Malhotra being on the same coaching staff in Vancouver. Like what about Adam Foote as the head coach and Manny Malhotra as the assistant?
Yeah.
Like no, not many people have brought that up. It's a possibility, or maybe the other way around. Although, like Rick says, you would think wherever Rick Tocchet goes, Adam Foote is going to follow, given their relationship. Their business relationship in Vancouver, but I just wonder if that's a possibility as well.
Well, especially you wonder if Malhotra
and if this
Abbey Canucks run continues, how much does that do to his demand around the league, right? So if you don't hire Malhotra for the head job, do you almost need to promote him to assistant to keep him in the organization for the future? Well, I think it's a good point that there might be a way to have both of them on staff, especially if it's Foote as the head coach. I wanted to ask you guys about Connor Garland as well, who I know you chatted with on your show. Of course, he's over playing for USA at the World Championships. 1 year left on his deal, and it's gone from being a guy, you know, they were exploring trying to trade, to now being one of their most consistent, productive forwards. Obviously, Rick Tocchet was a huge fan of the way he played the game and trusted him a lot. And Rick, I heard you mention on your show that, you know, teams called the Canucks about Connor Garland at the trade deadline. And as we sit here and kind of wonder, okay, what's this forward group going to look like next year? What can they do to remake the forward group? Connor Garland's going to be eligible for an extension. Do you think there's a chance that, A, either they get an extension done this summer with Connor Garland, or if they don't think it's going to happen, they explore trading him and opening up some extra cap space?
Okay, so maybe we should learn from the Brock Besser situation we're in today. He's 6 weeks away from walking away from the Vancouver Canucks for the first time in 9 years. One of the big reasons is they never went to him last July 1st. So if you're going to ignore a guy in the summer, okay, they didn't. Look, I was told this week that Besser is a long shot because you had all year to do him, sign him, even at the deadline. So look, if you don't get to people, they can get to Thatcher Demko this summer as well. Right. But if you're going to ignore people, they ignored Tocchet last summer. They ignored Besser last summer. So maybe this summer they don't ignore people and they actually go and call and try to cut deals because Tocchet's gone and Besser's on the he's got 1 foot out the door.
Mm-hmm.
Like it was told to me very nicely this week that it's a long shot to get Besser back. And you know what? Maybe they should get to Garland and maybe they should get to Demko this summer. Because guess what? They didn't do that with Tocchet, and they didn't do it with Besser, and it looks like they're going to lose. Well, they've lost one, and they're going to lose another one.
Yeah, and Garland, I mean, guys, we had our poll question today, and it was pretty overwhelming, I think, Rick. Pretty overwhelming. We asked, was Garland their best forward this past season? And I think over the course of 82 games, he played 81. I think the answer has to be yes, just in terms of consistency. And the ability to get noticed out there, you know, Besser tends, nothing against him, but tends to be streaky. Certainly same with Jake DeBrusk. We all know what happened with Elias Pettersson. Garland was their best forward.
Consistent.
So I what you just said there, I wouldn't be surprised at all. They try to get to him early. He's somewhat of a fan favorite. I don't think he's going to cost that much. I could see them doing this earlier rather than later.
Yeah, and guys, I'm convinced that if the Canucks, Thomas, one sec.
Yeah,
I'm convinced that if the Canucks, I'm convinced that if the Canucks would have made Tocchet that offer in the 11th hour, if they would have made it 3 months, 6 months, or 8 months ago, he probably would have accepted.
Yeah.
So they got burned on that, and you know what? Brock Besser wasn't doing cartwheels when he got no calls last summer coming off of 47 goals combined in the playoffs and also in the regular season. So, you know what? Maybe they change this summer and they get to a couple of guys.
If they want them.
If they want them.
Well, that's right. And the other thing is Garland. I think you guys touched on this. You know, Garland is trade bait. I mean, there's not a whole lot there when you want to get a top six. You did touch on it. You're talking about him being dangled before the trade deadline. I think a lot of teams would want that guy, and is that in a package help get you a top six forward or top two center?
Especially whatever team hires Tocchet.
That's a good point.
Get me Garland.
Yeah.
Call up Philly right away.
Get me Garland right away.
Third time lucky.
Yeah. And I do expect Demko extension talks to occur over the course of the summer, and those are going to be fascinating, Rick, because of the notion of sharing risk, right, on a player who, you know, could, if he played 60 games next season, absolutely put himself in line for like $8 million plus per season with term, but also, you know, the floor is kind of non-existent given the spate of injuries that he dealt with over the course of the season. The Garland side of it, I'm a little bit curious about. Garland didn't really talk about the idea of wanting to sign an extension when he was asked about it at locker room cleanout. You know, he's an American-born player. I'll be very interested to see how this one all sort of sorts itself out and what the team does to sort of pivot in a world where Garland says, hey, I'm not prepared to have that conversation this summer. I think at that point you really do have to consider your options overall, especially given the emergency-level needs up front that this team's going to be working through over the course of the next few months.
All right, Rick.
One final thing.
Go ahead.
One final thing. You know, I don't know what happens with Besser in the sense that, you know, they're really far apart right now. I just don't see that. But, of course, I have to say one phone call can change anything. I do believe in my heart that the Canucks will make one final stab at trying to get Pia Suter done. And I do believe that sometime in June, before that guy hits July 1st, I can see this club trying to take one final last shot at trying to get Pia Suter done. But time will tell. We'll have to wait and see.
We will see whether it happens or not. Rick, go home and enjoy a nice, tall Long Island iced tea, all right? And we'll catch up with you guys next week.
Crown on the rocks. Crown on the rocks.
That's right.
Crown on the rocks.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Cheers, boys. That is Don Taylor, Rick Dhaliwal from Donnie and Dhali on Check TV, which you can watch Monday to Friday, 10 to noon, and they join us every Wednesday, but Tuesday this week for the crossover here on Canucks Talk.
Wednesday, and Tuesday.
And also sometimes Tuesday. If that's what our schedule dictates. So, yeah, not, as you said, you're not quite willing to go as far as Patrick Johnson at Post Media.
No, that's not what I'm... That's not what you're reporting. And what doesn't match my understanding of the situation.
But, yeah, fair enough.
But I think the idea is that the idea that, you know, Foote and Malhotra are both very serious candidates and that the candidate pool has thinned out significantly.
Small.
A short list. Yeah, I mean, that is true.
Yeah. Can you, I'll put you on the spot really quickly here.
Yeah, that's fine.
Can you personally, so not based on what other reports we've had, but can you personally confirm another candidate beyond Malhotra and Foote?
I cannot.
Okay. That's very interesting to me, because that suggests, and I know Marco Sturm's name has been out there, and that doesn't mean, just the fact that you can't confirm it doesn't mean it's not true, all of that, right? But it does seem like at most we're talking like absolute most four names in the running.
Well, do you remember for years, like, how many interviews Pierre Maguire used to get?
Yes.
Right? Like, be careful with names that come out at this time of year, because teams often hold them very close to the chest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And people interviewing often want to be seen interviewing, right? So there's an asymmetry in terms of incentives.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, I currently cannot confirm who else is on Vancouver's shortlist. You know, there's some names that I could throw out there and feel informed about throwing out there, but at the end of the day, it would be things that are not confirmed.
Sure.
And I want to live solely in that realm while dealing with this specific data set. I just think more than anything, you know, I think Malhotra is obviously a very strong candidate, highly regarded internally, and I'm still watching Adam Foote here as a very serious contender.
Okay, we will take a break here. And by the way, this hour, I already did the Rack Steel read, but I'll do another one in the next segment as well. Anyways, we'll take a break here. We got an open segment next before we chat with Jason Bukala at 1 o'clock. You have a piece up at The Athletic today with Harmon Dial, looking at potential UFA center options. Obviously, a couple of names jump to the top of mind when we talk about that, but there's some interesting ones further down the list. We can get into that. We can take your text, 650-650, to the Dunbar Lumber text line next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. To Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz. We are live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and rental warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you, or online at dunbarlumber.com. This hour of Canucks Talk is brought to you by Rack Steel. Rack Steel has the expertise to get you operating faster with forklifts and pallet racking in stock. Visit them online at racksteel.com. And by the way, at the World Championships over in Europe, Canada beating France 3-0. Did they go to the second to the second intermission here? I missed it. Anyways, it's commercial break, so I'm going to say it's through 40
minutes. Sidney Crosby with an incredible...
Yeah, I was a little worried there.
Individual effort.
We got Crosby, McKinnon, Konechny, go down the list, Noah Dobson, Brandon Montour. We're only beating France 2-0, and then Crosby was like, I'm going to score another goal. I'm going to pad this a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to spin off three guys and then go to the net. I mean, dominating like he was
do
in
Sidney
Rimouski.
Crosby stuff. Yeah.
Just crushing a bunch of French speakers.
Just like old times.
I feel like a kid again.
This is great. I love beating French speakers in hockey. I do appreciate the World Championships that they have the bigger pool of countries.
Oh, it's so cool.
I love it.
These stories, too. Like, so sometimes those teams will hire guys who have, you know, like family ties or ancestral ties. And I'm not just talking players, but I'm talking like coaches. Like you'll get the rare NHL goalie coach who's like a consultant for Team Italy at the Worlds and just like goes and spends a month in the summer in
wherever,
Italy or whatever. Yeah. And like the stories of some of those like smaller countries that like really the goal is to win your last game so you don't get relegated down a pool. And the team's composed of like, you know, a few pros that play in Switzerland, maybe one guy in the American League and like a bunch of guys who are like bankers in like Rome. Or Genoa or whatever, and like the stories that you hear, the hockey guy stories from some of those like smaller world championship teams, sounds so cool.
Yeah,
sounds
it's
so
awesome.
Fun.
Anyways,
I love this tournament, man.
Shout out to the World Championships, and it's so cool that Sidney Crosby is over there doing his thing for Team Canada once again.
Must be so cool to be that good.
Yeah, seriously, that'd be nice, huh? Nice to be that talented at something.
It would be nice to be that good at my job.
Well, you published a piece at The Athletic today. I don't know if it was Sidney Crosby-esque, but it was pretty good.
It was not. Maybe a little more like Jack Roslovic-esque.
Yeah, it was workmanlike. A workmanlike effort up at The Athletic Thomas Drantz and Harvard Dial. Hey, man, you're getting the job done. Anyways, Canucks free agent targets down the middle. 8 UFA centers who could fix Vancouver's top six. And, of course, we have all spent a lot of time.
I just like the alliteration, by the way. Fix might be a little bit much.
You mean UFA fix, yeah. Yeah, I was going to say fix, really?
Fix.
They're going to fix it?
Fix and six?
Yeah, the rhyme, not alliteration. That's a rhyme. Alliteration is when it starts with the same letter.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Not ends with the same letter? Are you sure?
Don't think so.
Same sound at the beginning of adjacent or closely connected
words.
At
the beginning.
Right. So what's it if it's at the end?
That's a rhyme. That's what do you mean? What is it at the end? That's what words rhyming means.
Oh, okay.
Like you thought like fence and tense was alliteration?
No, like I had a line in it that was like, fix Vancouver's top six mix.
I think that's just rhyming.
My bad. Yeah. Good to know.
There we go. We learned something new.
Of course I put the snootier word on it. That's classic. and incorrectly. Man.
All right. So obviously a lot of familiar names that we've spent time talking about here. Sam Bennett, who we'll get to, right? You know,
Rules.
Matt Duchene, Brock Nelson, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Eh.
Yeah, you go down the list. But
I'm out on Brock Nelson, unfortunately.
Obviously,
it would be a huge boost. But
an extra layer of kind of depth on this piece, you know, beyond just the kind of top line looking at the guy's hockey DB or whatever. And, I mean, we should talk about Sam Bennett because he's the number one guy on the market in this category as a top six UFA center. And
Canadian
he is a
hero.
Fascinating player profile because there is so much to like. And also, if you are used to analyzing potential UFAs and sweating out UFA deals that your team hands out, there's a lot to be concerned about with Sam Bennett as well as a potential UFA target.
Yeah,
and
there is, but also I feel like a lot of those concerns are like passe, like we have to get over it. You know what I mean? Like we have to recalibrate what we think about in terms of a risk profile now that we're through, you know, the calcified austerity of the flat cap era. I mean, we live in the cap growth era now, right? So look, Sam Bennett has only exceeded 50 points once in his career. He's going to turn 29 before the market opens. So do you want to know the terrifying truth or do you want to watch Sam Bennett sock some dingers? You know, like I personally think that we have now entered a phase, a sea change phase in NHL team building theory and in sort of the scarce resource dynamic that governs the NHL, where in the past you had to be really careful about committing money to players that were risky because if they failed, you were cooked. Like it was going to really significantly hamstring your ability to contend around them short of landing like three all-star level contributors in the draft a la the Dallas Stars, right? I mean, you literally have to hit on Harley, Haskinen, Stankoven, and Wyatt Johnston to still be going deep as like a low ceiling team because you handed out those extensions to Ben and Sagan, right? Like those, and Jason Robertson, by the way, and Jake Oettinger, right? Like ludicrous draft efficiency helped paper over that for the Stars for years. But now we're about to hit this point where if you sign Sam Bennett and he's a 45-point middle six center, as opposed to being, you know, the 55 to 60-point raw meat-eating, clutch goal-scoring, scumbag playoff-performing crusher that we know and love and are watching at the moment, you know, lead this sort of rally against the Toronto Maple Leafs, you can live with it in part because, hey, guess what? You're going to get $8.5 million more in cap space next season and then $7.5 million after that. And then who knows where it goes from there. But we're probably able to count on lifts and the market resetting on a regular basis. And as such, you know, you can have a little bit more fun. You can take wilder swings, especially because in this world where cap space is less important than accumulating talent, just bringing talent in, even if Sam Bennett hits like a 50th percentile outcome over the first two or three years of the deal, guess what? He's still a hard-nosed championship caliber center. He'll still have resale value, right? You're not going to get stuck with guys the way you used to get stuck with Louis Eriksson's or you know, Jay Beagle's or Antoine Roussel's. Like there's a level of like give, or what's the word I'm looking for? Like a margin for error that exceeds what used to exist. And as such, like, I think it makes more sense for teams to take home run cuts, provided that the player is of a certain level. And for me, Sam Bennett's just clearly a player at that level. 20 teams are going to want to get this guy for a reason. The Florida Panthers are probably going to try and move heaven and earth to retain him.
Mm-hmm.
If it involves shedding significant salaries to do so, like, my guess is Bill Zito and company are going to do their best at the end of the season to make that happen. Sam Bennett may never even get to July 1. Even if he does get to July 1, you know, take the number you think you'd pay Sam Bennett, say $7.5 million times 8 or 7, add $3 million to it and to the AAV, and that's probably just like the opening bid to get in the door to have a chance to pitch him. At which point you still need him to pick you over five or six other teams.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, and great. Be in that bidding. Be in that line. Do everything you can, I think, especially when you're positioned the way the Canucks are. Like, how many seasons do we have to watch a Canucks core that doesn't have an elite competitor with the sort of metal that Sam Bennett brings, certainly in the playoffs, but regularly throughout the regular season? Like, we see Garland do it, but I mean, how many Canucks players would you be like elite competitor about from the last 4 years?
Yeah, not that many. And that's what Sam Bennett is. And that's, again, there's so many extremely strong, convincing reasons. I was thinking about this, and I think a lot of it for me, the willingness to take that bet on Sam Bennett, not to always bring it back to this player, but it does come down a lot to how confident you are in Elias Pettersson bounce back. Because if you think you're getting a Pettersson back to form, and then you say, okay, we're going to splurge on our second line center, Sam Bennett, because he's the perfect counterpoint to Elias Pettersson, and he has that elite competitiveness and all of those, that the physicality and everything about him, and we love that 1-2 punch down the middle. Like, if you're getting the best version of those players as your 1-2 punch down the middle, I'm very, very interested in that. If you're not getting the best version of Elias Pettersson, and you still lack a legitimate number one center, signing Sam Bennett to be your second line center at a massive price and a massive term, that starts to get into, are you handicapping yourself for a post Quinn Hughes world at that level, right? And I know you make the point like, hey, well, you'll be able to move him probably, and you'd think so, but you never know. And it always can create a layer of complication. So for me, if you think you're getting Elias Pettersson back next year, if you think that's a bet you're happy to take as Canucks management, then I think you go all out and you break the bank with Sam Bennett and you try to fill out the wing situation around that, because you love your 1-2 punch down the middle. If you're not sure and he's just, you know, just a second line guy who's a 45 point guy, but you don't have that layer above him, then I'm not sure what you're spending the money for. You know what I mean? Because that version of the team's not going anywhere. So you're not getting the great playoff Sam Bennett, because you're probably not going to the playoffs in that world.
Yeah, but I mean, if like, So if you're keeping Elias Pettersson, though, you have to...
You're implicitly making that bet.
And you have to set it up so that what do you get if you're right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, if Elias Pettersson bounces back and you've bolstered the lineup around him and you've got, like, a Bennett, Hedl, Ratu set as your center depth and behind Pettersson, and you've got a defense core that we're pretty interested in and solid goaltending and you like the coach that you brought in,
mm-hmm.
well, then all of a sudden you're looking up and saying, hey, this should be a playoff team in the West. This is a team we're not going to be talking about the Anaheim Ducks and the Seattle Kraken in the rearview mirror, or the Utah Hockey Club in the rearview mirror. We're going to be talking about launching an assault at the Vegases and the Los Angeleses of the world and trying to get back in the mix at the top of the Pacific Division. Like, that's what you have to set yourself up for, right? You can't, if you're hedging on Pettersson, you move him.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
If, yep.
if you keep him, then you can't manage scared. You manage as if he's going to bounce back and set your team up so that when he does, it makes you a really good team as opposed to, you know, whatever we watched this past season.
You know, the other name that jumped out to me at a very different end of the spectrum reading your piece, but the one, you know, we talked yesterday about, okay, you know, we've talked Bennett, Ehlers, Marner. Is there a world where they could get Marner? All that. Offer sheets. Matthew Nye's offer sheets. What about the unsexy move? The much less glamorous, less high-profile name, but that might be a good fit as well. Like, those are the ones we should have on our radar, too. And the name that jumps off the page for me here is Jack Roslovic. And that's a name that's come up on our program before that we know the Canucks were interested in when he was in Columbus, they talked about. And, you know, still only 28, right-shot center, took a lot of draws for Carolina, even though he played on the wing, mostly there with the Hurricanes. And again, as I captioned it, it's not the sexiest name. No one's going to see, oh, they signed Jack Roslovic on July 1st and think, like, oh, wow, this is a totally different dynamic to the top six. He might not even be a top six player. That might be a big stretch for Jack Roslovic. But again, you just go through the profile and, okay, who's going to be available? They need help down the middle. Size, speed profile, right shot, all of that, 28. If I had to bet on one of these players on your list ending up on the Canucks, I think I'd be taking Jack Roslovic.
He also is really good on the power play, like sneaky good on the power play, high-end thinker, right-handed shooter, good on the half wall, can play a little bit in the bumper. And in a world where you're not going to keep Besser, right, that is a need.
Yep.
That is something this club is going to need to address. Maybe Jonathan Lekaramäki helps there. I think that was actually the area of his game where he looked most NHL ready.
Yep.
Which is very non-derogatory by me. Right? Right? Like, his smoothness 5-on-4 impressed me a lot, genuinely. Especially for a young player. He had a mature veteran feel for some of the nuances of 5-on-4 stationary attacking strategies and tactics. But Roslovic would be more tested there. He's actually really, really good there. He's fast, like legitimately quick, which the Canucks love and need desperately. He spiked as a faceoff guy this past year. Now, he mostly played on the wing for Carolina, but was winning 54-55% of his draws with spiked percentages in both the defensive zone and the offensive zone, which you like to see. So there's at least some indication that he's improved there. The club has been after him before.
Yeah.
Back earlier on in the sort of Rutherford Alvin era, where the team was looking to shed salary from the wings, guys like Besser and Garland being available, everyone remembers. Like, I believe Roslovic was a guy the club kicked the tires on, went at least a little bit down the road, in terms of a buy low center option to sort of add some heft. This club's been after center depth for a long time, right? And right-handed center depth in particular.
We used to talk about the Andrew Peak Jack Roslovic package from Columbus, right? That we were always anticipating
and
that.
For Bo Horvat.
Yeah.
I'd say they did better than that.
Yes, they did.
I'd say they did better.
Yeah, with Philip Ronick, absolutely.
Sure. They did better than Peak. I think Ratu still has some road to cover before we're talking about him.
Oh, Roslovic. Sure.
Anyway, speed, 28, right-handed. We know how much hockey fit matters to this organization. As you go through sort of the list of names and Duchesne and on and on, you know, Granlund, like, Roslovic just feels like if you were to target, you know, a center in free agency, Roslovic, first of all, isn't going to appear on some lists of unrestricted free agents as a center because he played a lot on the wing, but we know that he has been a center, especially during his time in Columbus, so I think he's apt, but he feels like the Jake DeBrusk center in unrestricted free agency this summer.
Right.
Like,
I would say he's a tier below Jake DeBrusk.
Well, for sure, but I mean, the age matches.
Sure,
the,
sure, sure. Relatively young for matches. A free agent. Yeah. Tools that they like. Yeah. Okay.
The value center version of what Jake DeBrusk was, where, you know, he may not have been like the top or sexiest name, but he was the one that made the most sense from the Canucks perspective.
And again, okay, so if you're not able to get Bennett, which is going to be an incredibly tall task, even if he hits the market, right, that's going to be extremely difficult. So then you're looking at trade targets, and also just instead of putting all your eggs in one basket, probably making a bunch of different bets. And Jack Roslovic fits the profile of that. Okay, hey, we're going to sign Roslovic, and we're going to maybe try to get a couple of other guys in the door as well, maybe that are versatile, can play center or wing.
Right.
And we're going to see what sticks. We're going to see how the combinations all work together.
Well, and you know, Roslovic's not the defensive player or the overall hockey IQ guy that Pugh Suter is. He's also not the goal scorer 5-on-5 that Pugh Suter is. So there are things to prefer about Pugh Suter, but in terms of bringing some of that versatility, but in a faster, bigger, younger package, right? I mean, that would be sort of the bet you make. Like, just you keep Pugh Suter at $4 million, or would you roll the dice on Roslovic and probably save yourself $1 million?
Yeah.
You know, that sort of is kind of the decision that you balance or weigh there. And I think I probably come down on the Roslovic side from a hockey fit perspective, even though I think Pugh Suter's probably a better player.
Okay, we will take a break here. Jason Bukala joins us on the other side, of course, from Sportsnet's NHL coverage and a former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. That's next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Trantz here. We are broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and you can send your thoughts and questions in about the Canucks coaching search, the Canucks off season, Stanley Cup playoffs, of course, as well. Edmonton Oilers on the brink of advancing to the conference finals after shutting out the Vegas Golden Knights last night. So round three approaching rapidly here for the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're going to chat with Jason Bukala momentarily here in this segment, and we'll wrap up the show in the next segment with the whiteboard as well. As mentioned, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and now joining us on the hotline powered by Power West Industries. Don't get caught in the dark when it matters most. Visit them at powerwest.ca today. They keep the lights on. Joining us on the hotline from Sportsnet, former director of amateur scouting in the NHL, he's our guy, Jason Bukala. Books, what's going on, man?
Listen, what's going on with you two is more like the question. A couple of part-timers taking the rest of the week off, I guess, into the first long weekend of the summer, you know, whatever.
Yep.
Nice. I got to sign me up for your job.
Well, Drance has a real excuse.
I've got a wedding.
He's going to a destination wedding, so I get that. And I just kind of got a bonus time off. It's fantastic. I'm not even using vacation days. It's great.
That is awesome.
Yeah. Jamie's the real winner.
I am. Let's not forget it. I'm the real winner here.
I'm actually using PTO and having checked in on the Canucks coaching search and you know, inquired whether or not I should bring my laptop over the course of this morning to Jamaica. I'm going to. So looks like things are going to come to a head here, Books, which we've been talking about all throughout the program. What are your thoughts on the prospect of, you know, a more inexperienced candidate, whether it's a Malhotra or perhaps an Adam Foote type, and their suitability to give the Canucks what they need from a bench boss?
Yeah, I'm okay with that. I really am. It's interesting, though, as soon as you repositioned it, because we kind of talked about it a little bit last week, but, you know, I look at St. Louis's bench, and, you know, you get a Claude Julien as a right-hand man on that bench, and I'm wondering if there's going to be somebody of that ilk. You know, like, don't forget that a guy like Rick Bowness, like Bones even aligned himself as a senior assistant, if you will, or associate there for many, many years, coming through with some younger coaches before he got back into the head coaching gig, obviously. But I'm okay with that. The one thing that I have to be cognizant of here is that the upper brass in Vancouver, they know better than anybody the type of communication skills that are going to be required for the next coach to come into this room and get them back on the rails. You know, I've got a very long breakdown for it's going to be a two coffee type of read. Might drop today, definitely tomorrow, on the Canucks top to bottom organizationally. And you know, one of them there is that they have so many guys signed the contracts and not really a lot of room for jobs. They're going to have some money to spend. So the next coach is going to have to come into a room that he's just going to have to fix a little bit, right? Not a little bit, a lot.
A lot. And,
yeah, a lot. And the communication is going to have to be there. So I'm okay with that, guys. I think that those names are capable of that.
Yeah, and as you said, look, management's going to have the best view on what exactly the coach will need to do to patch over things in the room and get the most out of those guys. But, you know, one of the things Drance and I were talking about earlier was, on the one hand, you can look at Adam Foote and say, well, he's been in that room. He knows what's gone on. He has firsthand experience with it. And does that give him a leg up on solving some of those issues? I think that's valid, but I also wonder how much value there could be to bringing in someone relatively fresh. I mean, Malhotra's been in the organization, but not day-to-day in the room. And to me, maybe what this group needs is a fresh perspective, someone coming in without baggage to kind of start fresh in this situation. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that that's a fair angle as well. You know, the unfortunate part about this, it's delicate how we position it, isn't it? Because Adam Foote, to a man in the organization and outside of it as well, would all agree that he's done a wonderful job with the defense there, and the captain loves him, and so it's hard for me to position it, but at the same time, I just think it's human nature to carry over a bias when you've had to deal with a lot of distractions. So it's kind of like when you you know, when your parents get divorced and, you know, you're still sticking around with half of the family, you know, you still got that half, but you're still kind of holding on a little bit of a bias towards whatever went wrong before. And sometimes a fresh start in coaching and sports is the best way to go about it, even though Adam Foote hasn't done anything to deserve that necessarily if he really does want this job. But I do think something's new, something fresh, something that's going to motivate the crew. And Manny Malhotra is not outside of it, but he doesn't have the same bias as being in the room on a daily basis. So I agree with that. I think that's a safe strategy.
How do you, like, Adam Foote has 1 year of professional, or sorry, 1 year of head coaching experience at the WHL level. He was, you know, let go by the Kelowna Rockets with 13 or so games to go a year they were hosting the Memorial Cup Books. So it didn't go great, but we all know about his leadership skills from a lifetime in hockey, and obviously he's done an excellent job as an assistant head coach, as an assistant coach, clearly has, you know, the trust of some really smart hockey guys, whether it's Rick Tocchet or Quinn Hughes, perhaps Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin here too. How do you sort of look at that Rockets experience versus what we've seen since in assessing his readiness to take a top job?
Yeah, I think that thinking back to the whole Rockets experience when I was going in there and scouting, you know, his kids were coming through playing there in Kelowna, and also the, you know, when you're at the major junior level like that, you know, the owners sometimes are a little more antsy, or they have their own agendas, and that's all fair. They own the club. And I'm not suggesting for a second that doesn't go on in the NHL, because we all know it does as well. But I just think that the connection there, the respect factor right out of the hopper with these pros, it's just different. It's a different nut to crack. And I think he's a better pro coach than a junior coach. And you don't have to look. You just look on the East Coast guys, like what Marty St. Louis done in Montreal. You know, like, he didn't have any of that type of experience or pedigree. But they have a lot in common, don't they? Winners, proven winners, warriors at the hardest time of year as players. And then clearly really good communicators. They're getting through to young people. And so those are all positive. So in a big way, I'd hate to see him go. But the other side of me is that I'm so exhausted by everything that went on.
Yeah.
I just feel like a clean slate is probably the best requirement.
We were talking Canucks center targets and unrestricted free agency, and the subject of Sam Bennett came up. And
did my article post? My article must have posted. Okay, go ahead.
we might have written the same article, Books. we were talking about it, and you know, 5 years ago, 29-year-old only has one season over 50 points. You know, I would have been like, the risk profile on that in the flat cap era is pretty high. And now, with cap growth, I just want to see Sam Bennett sock some dingers. And more than that, I just want to see this Canucks team add somebody who is a genuine elite competitor night to night and can kind of lead the charge and bring guys with him, right? Not enough to be performative. You know, I'm angry that we're losing and we have to start playing the right way. And also, here's a bad blind back pass as I cross the blue line and I'm not going to back check afterwards. Like, I mean, the real stuff that a guy like Bennett brings. I just want to see some Canucks players who have that for a change.
Yep. I'm with you. I 100% agree. 100% agree. What I loved about them most in the last, before this year, and, you know, sort of at the beginning of the year was, the JT Miller factor, that type of personality, that type of growl. Sam Bennett's not going to score like that, but all the rest of the stuff that he's going to do, you know, he's everybody around you gets a little bit bigger, a little bit heavier, and feels like they have to be more accountable when you have more of those people in your lineup. And I mean that. Like, you can be the most skilled guy in the world, but you're going to pull your weight in spades when you have two or three of those guys, hopefully, in your lineup, because you don't want to let those guys down. Because you know what those guys do for you every day? They block shots with their face. They beat opponents up to create open space for you. So you better not let them down by having a laissez-faire approach at any portion of your game. And it increases the accountability in the room. That's what it does. And not only are you keeping the opponent more accountable, obviously, because they got to be aware of guys like Sam Bennett, I just think that the insulating of that with your group, it's really important to have those guys on your team. And you can't have all choir boys. And you got to have some squeaky wheels. And those squeaky wheels, they're good to have. And I'm with you. 100% I'm with you. I'd like to have a couple if I could.
That would be nice. A whole team.
Yeah.
The Tampa Bay Lightning model, a whole team of just guys who suck to compete against. Let's go.
Yeah. No, listen, like, just make life miserable on people. I don't like when that bus pulls into the bay, you know, and they're loading off. I want the other team to think, oh, God, here we go. I love that. You know what I mean? Like, it's great. It's great.
Is Sam Bennett even going to make it to UFA, you think? I mean, it seems like there's all the reasons – other teams are going to be bidding like crazy or reasons why Florida is going to do everything possible to try to keep them there.
I really believe that it's going to come down to what they want to do with Aaron Ekblad. And from a distance, you know, seeing that Seth Jones, they acquired Seth Jones, and seeing the money, the freight they got to carry on him, even with Chicago eating some money, he's playing secondary to Jones right now there. So that, I don't know, is my answer, but it's one of them are going to go. That's my gut feeling.
Right.
If you would have asked me a month and a half ago, I would have said it was Bennett. I believe Bennett wants to cash in on this. That's my feel. And I think that he would sacrifice Florida, the lifestyle that he has there. I wouldn't do it if I were him, personally. I'd stay in Florida for another X number of years and keep going the way I'm going. But I think that somebody's going to pay him a significant dollar that's going to be hard to turn down out there, and he'll probably very much entertain it. We'll see where it goes.
Another name we were talking about that's going to cost much less, but also be much less exciting maybe in a lot of ways, that's a UFA target, is Jack Roslovic from Carolina. And as we were saying, you know, played on the wing this year, but also took a lot of draws, can play center. What do you see in his profile? How would you like that potential fit for the Canucks?
I like that profile, actually. So Roslovic, you know, he's a guy that's going to be in the fight too. So he plays fast. He's involved. he's always, I'm dating myself going back to when I started scouting this guy. He's always left me wanting a little bit offensively. Like, he's teased me that there could be more there. But having said that, I don't need him to be like that. Like, Keeper Sherwood, guys, came in, had 19 and 21, hit everything in sight. And now, you know, you start adding some of these other names that you're throwing at me right now. I like it. I like that mix in the team. I like how the roster balances out. And I think you're a harder out as a group. So I think that's a solid name. What the cost association is going to be on that, not sure. So we'll see, but that, why not? That's a viable name. I mean, I threw Ryan Donato in there as well, only because I know he's older and there's going to be some limitations on the defensive side of the puck. But, you know, 31 goals in Chicago on a 31 and 31 on a not a very good team, making $2 million, you know, there might be some value there too. We'll see where that goes. You know what's going to happen in Chicago. I'm just guessing at this, but they're going to overpay to keep some of their own guys just to try and be relevant. He might be one of those guys, but we'll see. But really, when you're going through it, I know you guys have done the exercise. Not a lot of names, eh? Like, not a lot of great names.
No, not a lot of names. I think I like Donato a lot. The thing that people don't realize about Donato is, like, that guy will go to the net. Like, that guy has some jam, which I like, but the wheels aren't there.
Not great wheels.
So I just worry a little bit given what this Canucks team needs. I mean, if you want a smart guy who's deceptively tough, who's like, you know, maybe he's better on the wing than center, but he can definitely play center, like, just extend Pew Suter.
I'm extending him anyways. I'm extending him anyways in this whole mix.
You're doing Suter and Donato?
Yeah, I would play Don.
Oh, man. We're too slow now. Books, we're too slow and too small. I hate it.
Yeah, but you're giving up. I'm associating cost with delivery here. So
fair enough.
If we look at the Besser's going to go out the door. He's at 6'5", right? He's going to go out the door because I'm not paying Besser $8 million, whatever the number is. I'm not doing that. If I can get Donato for half as much and the wheels are similar, let's just say that, I think Donato's in the fight more than Besser. I really do believe that. So if you got him at somewhere around the same amount of goals at half the price, now all of a sudden I could sign a Suter. I think I can sign a Suter and a Donato for the same price that I would have had a Besser. And I don't think that, and provided if we add some of these other pieces around us, we should still point out to be pretty good. So, I mean, that's the entry level strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously that's why you and I would get in the room and, you know, bark at each other for 3 or 4 days. And that's what's fun about it. Right.
For sure. Well, here'd be my first argument to you. We'll do it on air for our listeners. My first argument would be, if we're going to lose Besser anyway, can we at least turn it into not a win, but an opportunity in seizing, like, if we're going to lose Besser and we're probably going to lose Suter, can we at least turn that into an opportunity to get faster as a team, right? I'm losing two guys who I think are pretty good, but they're not burners. And if I'm losing that, is there a world where I can get faster and be more than the sum of my parts as a group as a result of just sort of focusing on team speed? And to lose Besser and sort of replace that cap hit with two guys that I like a lot as difference making, like, middle six guys, but I worry about their foot speed, to me sort of takes that option of like a really fast forward group punching above their weight off the table.
Okay. So I think that's great. This is a great discussion. So if we take let me present my look. If we insulate the group, the speed of the group, with more tenacity around them, more, mm-hmm. If we're heavier in other areas, I'm hoping that we can wear down our opponent a little bit more as well. And it's not like Donato isn't in the fight. And it's not like, we know what Suter did this year. It was great.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you start adding some of these pieces, the reality of it is this. The team identity is where the conversation would start. So right now we're throwing it all in a melting pot. How can we still score goals? How can we find more tenacity? How can we add that extra character to the group? There's a lot going on in this conversation. And yeah, we'd have to peel back the onion in several layers. There's going to be some sacrifices along the way. And what I'm saying is, if I can get 25 to 30 out of Donato at half the price and spend some money somewhere else to hopefully recoup more speed or whatever the case may be, I guess I have to build a team out a certain way. It'll take, it's not going to be perfect. No team is.
No.
But We'd have to see it through. I want to play fast. Hey, in a perfect world, I'll take a few less goals, play way faster, way more competitive every night, way more tenacious, because you know why? We're going to be a playoff team, and then we're going to be an even harder out in playoffs on balance based on what your strategy is. I get it, but it's not perfect. You have to you got to fit it all together, boys.
Absolutely. I just feel like if I'm Vancouver and I have a shot to do, you know, like just with faster skaters, whether it's like Roslovic ahead of Donato, for example, would be my priority there. You know, and if I could bring in, I don't know, let's say Victor Olofsson, not exactly a huge burner, but brings a little more quickness anyway, I think, than Donato does. I feel like I'd prefer to go that route from the perspective of just like turning the loss of better players in Pew Suter and Brock Besser into something that gives me a shot at being like more than the sum of my parts. You know what I mean? I just worry that
I do. I totally get it. Like, I'm on board with Roslovic.
Maybe let's go Mangiapane. Maybe I go Mangiapane instead.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe
you lost Fuchs.
Well, I mean, maybe. I'm gonna lose Books because we're going through UFAs. It's a tough class.
Yep,
I can do a lot worse than Mangiapane. Trust me.
Oh no, of course you can. But that's where you got to be careful, boys. You can't just open up the Pandora's box and say I'm going to do this, and this.
Cause, no,
you know, this show isn't long enough for the conversation I want to have now. Because what are we doing with Pettersson? Where are we going with the money there? You know, how much money are we going to have to set aside? If we keep Pettersson long-term at 11, what is it, 11-9? Am I
11-6.
11-6. If we keep him
every
at
every Vancouver sports fan just yelled it at their radio, by the way. It's a memorized number in this city, Books.
Okay, sorry. So if we keep him at 11-6, Quinn Hughes is $15 million. Like, you know, it's like, so all these little decisions we're making now have an effect later on because these guys are free agents and they want a little bit of term. So it bleeds into other things.
Yeah, I think you're bang on about the fact that the Elias Pettersson decision kind of hangs over everything, right? Like that's going to determine so much of what you do. And it is interesting. We're having this debate about, you know, they kind of need to just establish a team identity. Like, cause right now, what would you say next year going into the season the team's identity is? It's they have Quinn Hughes.
Oh, Quinn Hughes and friends.
Yeah, they need an identity beyond just we employ Quinn Hughes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it starts from the net all the way out. Demko's going into his last year at $5 million. Lankanen, listen, take a minute. All Vancouver fans should take a minute to look at Lankanen's stats this year and compare them to Demko's stats from last year when he was a Vezina finalist. They are almost equal. They're eerily similar. Who would have thought that? So what are we going to be doing in net? Like, is Demko going to be healthy? You start from there. And then when you start planning it out, like right now, if we have Pettersson back, that's why I love the fact that the transfer brought up Sam Bennett. I need somebody, two guys, three guys in the room to look across the room at guys like Pettersson, have that culture in there. And yeah, he's saying all the right things. I'm going to work out. I'm going to do this. All that. How, do you guys really trust that right now? I don't. I'm having a huge problem with it. And I got a month to make the decision before his no trade kicks in. Like, this is not good. So if we better be, you know, the culture has got to get back on the rails the way it was a year and a half ago. I don't know how we're going to do that. Because if I had all the right answers, I would have come up with way less dialogue from October till June almost. You know, this has been crazy. But they need to reestablish it for sure.
Books, great stuff, man. We really appreciate it. And we will look out for that piece on the Canucks, the deep dive that you have dropping soon at sportsnet.ca. Can't wait to read it.
Sounds good, boys. I'm fired up now, Dresser. I'm fired up over here.
All right, let's go.
Let's go, buddy. Have a good one.
Thanks, Books. Appreciate it. That is Jason Buchla from Sportsnet and former director of amateur scouting in the NHL. And I always enjoy the deep dives from Books. So we'll look forward to that one on the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, just before we go to break here, the whole idea of building that team identity, the more I think about it, like, let's just go all in on speed. Right. I think you already have started that process with the acquisition of Philip Hedl and Drew O'Connor.
Yep.
And potentially letting Besser and Suter walk. And so a part of me is just like, you know, you're dealing with such limited options and such flawed options. Try going to one extreme We should do the exercise really at some point. Like, what would the all speed summer look like? You know what I mean? Like,
Brandon,
you start
Tanev.
With Roslovic, yeah, Tanev, and the like.
Roslovic, Tanev, and then you trade Pedersen for Barzal.
Oh, all right, now we're talking. Now we're cooking.
I mean, if we're building team warp speed, right? It's got to be in the consideration set.
Absolutely, I like that. Yeah, like that's kind of what I want to see. And then at least then you have a clear idea of, okay, here's what we're going to do. We've got this group on the back end. We're going to play with a ton of speed up front. And we've got Quinn Hughes to elevate us. I don't know. It's not a great plan necessarily, but I can see it being better than a lot of the alternatives that are before them going into the summer. One final break here on the show. We'll do the whiteboard next. You can keep sending your texts in as well, 650-650 to the Dunbar Lumber text line. It is Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.